Hello and welcome to the TAA teleconference, Free Publicity, How to Create Podcasts and Digital Audio to Promote Your Book, presented by Dr. Kathleen King, a popular international keynote speaker, professor of education at Fordham University's Graduate School of Education in New York City, and president of Transformation Education. Kathleen is an award-winning educational podcasting expert and co-author of Podcasting for Teachers. Her major areas of research include distance learning, digital media, transformative learning, professional development, and instructional technology. Kathleen is an award-winning author of 17 books and over 130 published articles and research papers. Her books and web-based audio materials are used as course materials in universities worldwide and have a large following. She has led the development of many local and global innovative educational projects reaching over 6.4 million learners through technology. Kathleen has a doctorate in education and a master's in education in higher and adult education from Widener University, a master's in theology, and a bachelor's degree from Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. I will email all participants Kathleen's contact information following the teleconference. It will also be posted within the with the recording. I now turn the teleconference over to Kathleen.
Welcome. I'm very happy to be with you folks today. I hope you're doing well. This is an exciting session that I'm very happy to offer to you folks. As a one-of-a-kind session, I've been doing podcasting for over 5 or 6 years now and have used it primarily as purposefully used it at the beginning, primarily to distribute professional development worldwide, especially for people that didn't have access to professional development about educational technology. In the midst of that, I discovered something very interesting. It not only was accomplishing the purposes of bringing professional development to people around the globe much more effectively than we expected and in a very easy format, which we developed and honed, but it also increased my visibility across the globe as an author and as a speaker. Out of that has grown a pretty significant keynote speaking schedule where I traveled 65,000 miles last year doing keynote speaking, and my books have increased in sales. So as I became involved with TAA, I thought, well, maybe this is really a very vital way to share with my colleagues in higher education and authors of academic publications the ways to use podcasting and digital audio to enable people to understand your expertise. And what I discovered through this, what my listeners and readers have taught me, is they connect with me as an individual. Through listening to the podcast, they know every detail about me, and they're interested in those details. Goodness knows why, but they want to connect with the human being. And that's what the voice and your podcast is able to do. So this isn't something I purposely set out to accomplish using podcasts to promote books or to build a speaking career, but it's something that I've discovered, and I've discovered very effective ways to design, create, and promote podcasts, and we've actually written a couple of books on that as well because we do ed tech. So this is the first time that this session has been offered because you're a very unique audience, and I thought this message would be something that would be very powerful to add to the way that you promote and brand yourself as an individual, a professional, and also build a readership and following for your work. So that's kind of where I'm coming from with this. Podcasting has become much more popular and recognized in the years since we started. We started back in 2005. Actually, at that time when we started, iTunes did not even have podcasts listed in them. You had to use other podcast directories, which still exist. But once iTunes put podcasts on their front page as something that you could click, podcasting catapulted. And that opened up a new world. That was June of 2005, I believe. So this is where we're starting. You should have a handout that you were able to get from the TAAOnline.net website when you signed up for this class. and we're going to be working through this. One of the things that you'll see about myself in that first paragraph of information is that I produce several different podcasts. Some of these, most of these are ones where I'm one of the featured speakers. I like a format where I'm dialoguing with someone else. I find it to be very lively, encouraging, and it sustains the life of the podcast and the interest of the podcast. One or two of those are ones that I produce for other people as well, and I've brought in to do that. I'm currently a professor at Fordham University, and I'm happy to announce for the first time that as of August, I'll be a professor at University of South Florida in Tampa. As read in the bio, I'm an author, I'm one of you folks, and also a researcher. So why pursue podcasting? What is this thing, and what does it have to do with us being academic authors, for goodness sakes? Podcasting came from the field of digital music, and I mentioned iTunes earlier, and you think, well, iTunes, my goodness, that's music. You go in there, you download music. I heard about my kids or somebody else's kids running up big bills in there. Has nothing to do with money. Most podcasts are free. And, in fact, podcasts, yes, the early podcasts were often people that wanted to be their own disc jockey. They could say, oh, this is my favorite type of music. So they'd put their independent music on there. They'd splice them together. They'd have their little speaking parts in between, and they'd upload it, and other people could listen to them. It's asynchronous, which means that it's on demand. I record it, upload it. You can pull it down and listen to it anytime, anywhere you feel like it, now or 10 years from now, as long as I keep it up there. That's very different than the radio, isn't it? Okay. It's also much simpler because we've gotten to the point now that recording digital audio has become much simpler. And we're going to go into hardware and equipment because I know everybody's always interested in that. So that gives just a little background. What is this thing, podcasting? Started with the music side, but very quickly escalated into interviews, news-type broadcasts, dialogue among people, sharing ideas and sharing with their community audience, and also radio talk shows where people would call in. There are platforms where you can have your readers or listeners call in and interact with you. All sorts of possibilities. Most of these platforms are free, which fits us as professors and authors very, very well. Okay, academic authors do not make the big dollars that those New York Times bestsellers do we? Major benefits that I have seen with using podcasting for authors, and the reason people get into this, is that it's increasing your public visibility, and an important part. Even though we have the degrees, we have the research, and we have all these different job positions behind us, the podcast increases your validity as an expert because people get to hear you. They get to download these short, maybe 10 to 15 to 20-minute audio clips and hear what John Williams or Kathy King or Mark Gura has to say on a topic. And as they listen to you, they connect with you, and they realize you have more expertise. You jump off the page much more than you would in written text because it's your voice, your emotion, your passion comes through in a whole different way with voice. So your validity as an expert comes through triangulated not only with your background, your academic credentials, your professional experience, the text that you've written, but now with your credibility, your expertise that you're able to articulate. So if you put up, say, 5 or 10 free 10-minute audios that talk about little pieces of your areas that you work in, reasons why people will be interested in your field, what distinguishes you as an expert in the field, people get a rounded-out picture of what this person is about. There's other aspects as well, but let me just mention that. That's the validity part. And I cannot speak strongly enough. This is a strong piece. People are doing so much research on the web about the people that they're going to use in materials, going to invite in the speakers, et cetera, et cetera. What you have out there is cultivating your professional internet reputation. It extends your audience to new demographics, venues, and sectors, because you might not possibly be able to do book signings in Malaysia or get to Canada as frequently, or South America, Latin America, down to Argentina, or wherever. But we have huge listenerships for our podcasts in the UK, China, India, Korea, all over South America, Africa, France, areas that we have not frequented very much. So it's increasing your exposure, and they get to know you in that respect. You also, of course, we know we need to use multiple advertising spaces. This provides another one with a very low price point and extends the reach of your text to another media. Rather than just keeping your text in the silo of printed textbooks, let's break out that barrier, that wall, and take it into the world of podcasting and say, well, you know what? Even beyond promoting my book and building validity, what about if I provide resources as podcasts that people can, teachers can download a couple of segments that give them guidance as to how to teach the book, what the book's purpose is, how to work with the students to guide them into understanding. So that might be the PD side. In addition, you might do some interviews with experts. You might have some primary resources, or you might have some in-depth discussions that you share that students would listen to. So again, the students, imagine your students are reading a textbook and it says, go onto the website or go into iTunes and you'll be able to download an audio clip of material that supplements this chapter. They get to hear the author's voice. That brings the book to a different dimension of connecting with them. Very powerful aspect, too, in this age of budget cuts, we're looking for inexpensive solutions for teaching resources, and this can be an inexpensive add-on. Okay. This versus other media, it certainly has a benefit of being much easier to develop. There's a personal connection to the reader, which I described, and the part that I love the most, this on-demand aspect. Think about how everybody today expects to find the information they need on the web. And what's more, they expect to have instant access to it. You're connecting to that expectation, and you're bringing your text, your book, your academic volume into the 21st century way of living, working, and building and connecting with knowledge. That's what you're accomplishing with this. My students don't just have readings for their courses. Hello? My students just don't have readings for their courses. They also have listenings, so that they are doing some readings for the courses, and then they're going on and they're going to listen to different episodes as they go along in the course. What they tell me is they don't listen to them just on the computer. They put them onto their MP3 player and take them with them and listen to them on the train, while they're commuting, while they're at the gym. And they really enjoy that flexibility. So that's an important part of the media that you're working with. You're promoting your book, but you're also providing ancillary materials. Now, as we jump down and think about it, let's look at what types of podcasts there are. One that has become very huge in this field is the one that's about author interviews have become very powerful, and they're very dominant. If you just go into Google and you say author interview podcast, you'll come up with a whole variety of them. A lot of publishers are doing these, especially if you're doing a fiction book. Students really like these, be able to hear the author. In our field, it's also helpful, I think, especially for the teacher, and maybe as an introductory piece for the students. When I ask people about our age if they're familiar with podcasts, most of them say NPR. there's a very popular use. There's a particular, all sorts of formats for that. Then you have educational topics. How many have listened to audiobooks? Books that are read aloud in a podcast format. A podcast is basically digital audio uploaded to a server so that people can pull it down whenever it's available to them, whenever they want to use it. It's on demand. The other feature of a podcast is all of those episodes are strung together and connected by a file called a feed. This RSS feed is very powerful. It's a piece of code that most of your podcast hosts, most of your servers, will create for you automatically. This piece of code enables your people to subscribe to you, usually for free, and every time they open up iTunes or their podcast reader, automatically they get your newest episodes delivered to them. It's called a push technology. If you don't use that feed, you really are posting digital audio. When you use the feed, now you can be part of iTunes. If you don't have a feed, if you don't use that script, you can't get inside of iTunes. You can't be listed there. It is free to be listed at iTunes. Let's jump ahead. Take a look at page 3. You have a figure. So what does this look like? Here's the first model, version 1, and then version 2 of how you record audio for a classroom or you record audio as a author. First model is to use an available computer, laptop or desktop. You use free software, which I'm going to tell you about, and you have an available microphone. You see that tall, skinny mic? Yeah, they go about $5 to $8. That's your total investment to get started with this. An available computer, inexpensive mic. If you have a headset that plugs into your computer, even better. Free software. You turn on your software. You have some bullet points of what you're going to talk about. Turn on your software. You hit the big red button that says record, and you start talking. You save it. Maybe you edit out the dog barks or those sort of things, right? And then you save your file as an MP3 file, upload it onto your server. Server creates the feed, and those are your people listening to you with their little MP3 players hanging on their belts. Okay? Total investment, your content, your expertise, and a $5 mic if you don't have one available. Okay, model number 2. Flip the page to page 4. You might use a portable recorder. That's an Olympus that's shown there. It's about $100, $120 investment. But this enables you to go out and do interviews, record somewhere else, et cetera, et cetera. You record on that wherever you record. And then you plug that in with a cable, USB cable, into your computer. Move over your file. Now you can edit it with that same free software again. You just highlight the parts you want to delete, hit the delete button, they're gone, save your file. The rest of the process is also the same. So you can either sit at a laptop or desktop computer and record, or you can get a digital recorder, take that on the road with you, use that in a variety of settings. If you look at page 5, you have a list of the recording options. This is from a slide of a PowerPoint that I use. Going down the right-hand side are different types of microphones and approximations of what they cost at this time. Going down the left are the portable recorders. A very high-end portable recorder is an Eterol. That's going now, I just saw last night, at $279. My advice, if you're starting out with this for the first time, go cheap, as cheap as you can. Try with that $5 mic. See if this is going to work for you. See if you like it. See if it meets your needs. If it does, then you might invest a little bit more if you want better sound, if you need better sound. But I really like to encourage people to first see how this is going to work and if it meets their needs before they invest money in any sort of ed tech project. Now, up in the top left corner of page 5, you see Audacity. That isn't a commentary on anything. That's the name of the software that you'll be using. It's the free software I suggest you start with. You can get a Windows version, a Mac version, or a Linux version. The URL is right there. Download it, install it. That's what you use to record and edit your podcast. I'm going to pause now for questions before we continue. Anybody have any questions about what we've covered so far?
I have a question. Could you please repeat again the difference between just a podcast and just digital audio?
The difference between podcast and digital audio?
Yes, which you went over and I didn't quite get it.
Very good question. It's a little tricky one. Thank you for asking that. Digital audio is when you post audio on the web. People have to go to your website and click it. They have to keep going to your website to see if you have new information there, okay? A podcast, an official podcast, is when you take all those digital audios and you let the server, like Libsyn or one of these other podcast servers, which are very inexpensive, you let that host or server create a feed, a little script that's on the web for you. And instead of people having to only go to your website, they can still do that, but they can also use that feed and find you in iTunes. And in iTunes, they can say, they do a search and so they say author podcasts, and they say history of education podcasts. Bam, they come up with your podcast. If you don't use a feed, if you are only doing digital audio in iTunes, okay? So when you create that, when you have the server create that little feed, then you can sign up with iTunes. All your stuff gets connected to it automatically. And then people can go in and say, oh, yeah, I want to listen to Joe Schmo. And they click subscribe. And the power of this is every time they open iTunes, it automatically goes out and grabs the newest version of your episodes and adds it to their library. They don't have to keep checking your website every day to see if there's something new. iTunes tells them and gives it right to them as soon as it's there. It pushes it right to them. So say 2 months from now they forgot about you. Guess what? You're going to still show up in iTunes and be right in front of them. And they won't forget about you. You'll still get delivered to their box.
Hi. Can I follow? Are you going to show us how to do that particular part of it or not?
Well, really, it depends on the server that you're using. You don't have to do very much. All you're doing is you, once you make your audio, you go to your host, whatever host you're using. There's a whole bunch of them that I list in here for you. And you upload your file, you put in a description, and it creates the feed for you. Then it's that address that you tell iTunes about. In my book, I go through the details of how to hand create a code. That's a long conversation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. But the basic difference is you're using push technology or not, and as a beginner, you probably just want to let the server do it for you. It's very easy to let it do it for you. And I'd say 98% of podcasters, that's the way they do it. I'm very much a techie, so I like a lot of control of my own work. Any other questions? Does this sound like something that you folks are interested in using?
Yeah. How do you sign up on iTunes?
What you have to do first is you have to create your podcast, okay?
Yeah.
You have to create your audio. You have to have it hosted with somebody. You have to have your little feed address all set up. Then you go into iTunes, and sure enough, you click podcast, and you'll see down there, you never noticed before, add a new podcast.
Okay.
And it just has all these blanks that you fill in, and it takes about 3 or 4 days for it to show up in the system. But you have to have, I think now they say you have to have 5 episodes before you can be listed. Because there used to be a lot of people that did a, this is my first try of a podcast, and that's all that they ever posted was 1 episode.
So you'd have to have 5 saved
episodes.
Files.
Yeah.
Get listed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And I mean, just think about the power of that, that you're listed in iTunes. People can put in your name. They just, downloading iTunes is free. They download iTunes for free. There's a search bar up at the top, and they just put it, what's your name?
Kindy.
Kindy. They put in Kindy and your last name, and bam, they come right to your podcast.
Huh.
So if you go into iTunes and you hit that search bar and you go in and you put Dr. Kathy King, you'll come up with all my podcasts.
Huh.
Just as if I was Bruce Springsteen. You know? I mean, I'm right up there with the rockers. I'm a rock star now. Pretty scary.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. But that's a tremendous boost to our publicity and marketing for all of us.
Yeah.
You know? And we're speaking the language, we're in the culture, the milieu of the students that we're trying to reach as well.
Right.
They connect with this.
Okay. Thank you.
I recommend also, I encourage you as textbook and academic authors, put some material, let's be tricky and smart about this. Put some materials for the teachers in that podcast format, because you know what's going to happen? If you put teacher materials in there, the teachers are going to start using it, the professors and the teachers. That's going to get them used to using the podcast. They're going to figure out, whoa, this is terrific. I can listen to this on my computer, or I can take it to the gym. I don't have to be strapped to one spot to do this. This is convenient. But until they try it, they don't get it.
Right.
So if you put it in some good information for them that's going to make their job easier and better using your text, then they'll start saying to the students, go listen to the podcast that have the extra material for our book. This is great stuff. And then the students are going to get more excited about using that book as well.
Right.
Kathy?
Yeah.
I do have a question.
Go ahead.
And you had said earlier that, you know, people were picking it up in China and Africa and I'm hearing iTunes a lot. So is podcast proprietary info to iTunes?
Not at all. Not
okay,
at
so does
all.
Does it go out on other, it goes out on other venues also?
Yes, there are over, excellent question. Thank you. Over 100+ podcast directories. But most people are familiar with iTunes. So that's why we mentioned that. You have Podcast Alley. You have Podcast Pickle. You have Zencast. You have Zune. You have all sorts of different ones. And what you have to do is go in and register with each of them. Sign in. Go to their site. Say, yes, I want to add my podcast. Put in your information. Put in your feed. And then they'll post you in a day or two. You'll be there. You never have to go back again because that little feed automatically sends over all the information about each episode. Okay? But that's what I ended up doing. You can either hire somebody like my company to help set up your podcast and then you go off and you're automated. Or you can, you know, spend, what I did was when I set mine up, I set them up, and then every evening I spent about an hour loading myself into 5 more directories, you know, until I got through about 50 directories I thought were the major directories. The other thing you want to set up, if you're going to really get into this, probably your dedicated blog website. A blog is an easy site. If you use a server, let's go back to the notes a little bit, and I'll tell you how to set this up, okay? So let's get to the next step. You folks seem to have an idea of where you're headed. One of the servers that I find very reliable, it was one of the first ones out there, was Libsyn, L-I-B, it's not in the notes, L-I-B-S-Y-N, www.thebestofyourself.com. And that will cost you a whopping, are you ready, $6 a month to use them. What do you get for $6 a month? $6 a month, you get server space, you get forms where you just fill in your description, you attach your file to it, you upload your file, it's stored permanently on their servers, as long as you pay your subscription, and it is sent out whenever somebody clicks on it, right? It automatically generates a feed for you, and they give you a blog page. You don't have to have somebody create you a dedicated website. They'll give you a plain vanilla blog page if you want to use that as your starting place. I did for a couple of months. So it's a blog page that has episode one with a description, and you can click it and hear you talking. Episode two, and you click here, read the description and click it to hear you talking. And you can upload graphics in there, and you can put in links to go over to your books or your publisher, et cetera, or order form. So they're giving you blog space. They're giving you storage space. They're giving you an engine to turn to create your feed. But what I love the most, and I think most academics, they give you robust statistics. They tell you exactly how many people click on your file, how many people subscribe to your feed, and they tell you how many listen to each episode day by day, week by week, month by month. And you can download that in an Excel file or look at the graphs online. I could do another episode, another teleconference in the future on this topic, going into statistics that are available. I've used the statistics to help me formatively make choices about the content of our podcast to see who's listening and which episodes are more popular to kind of guide us into format, content, et cetera, frequency of our podcast. Tells you whether they're on Windows or Mac, tells you what country they're from. It gives you a map that shows you where they're signing in from. That's why I know where our people are from. And that blog space where you post your description and your file for them to click and listen to, people can leave comments if you let them, if you leave it open for them to leave comments. And you can leave it open and say the comments are held till you approve it. They're moderated. Or you can just let them leave it. I don't recommend that. I recommend, yes, you can leave a comment, but it's going to be held into a holding space until I review it. Once I make sure it's not spam, it's not nasty, then it'll go out onto public view. That's all included in a whopping $6 a month. The reason you don't want to post this on your publisher server or on your university server or your private server, if you get popular, which we never expected to, but we did, you will pull down your entire network and your tech team will be having your head. Because these files create a lot of traffic and they really are, they're not tiny files. They're like 10 to 20 megabytes apiece, and they can be bigger. And if you get a lot of traffic, you'll pull down the entire network. These dedicated podcasting hosts are set up to handle that kind of demand. That's why it's worth that $70 a year. Any questions on that? I want to go to designing content for a minute, but I want to see if there's any questions. That's a little bit to digest. You can find other podcast hosts by just putting in those keywords in Google. I mean, there's a whole pile of them out there. Go ahead.
Am I unmuted?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
So you recommend Libsyn. Is that of all of the 100, is that a directory, and is that the one that you think is the best?
That is a host. It also serves as a directory. Libsyn, yes. I was with another one. Libsyn bought it. Libsyn has been the granddaddy since the beginning of podcasting. Very reliable. I happen to know the guys that run it because I was part of the beginning of podcasting. and in all those conferences, techie conferences with them. They're very reliable, fantastic service. I really recommend them. There's a lot of others. There's just jot these names down. If you do a search for podcast host or podcast servers, you'll see names like these. These are other good ones. Cast Roller, Blueberry.
Could you spell that, please, Cast Roller?
I'm not sure how they spell it.
Okay.
Just when you do a search, just look for that name, all right? Because sometimes they leave out E's or O's or things like that, so I don't want to. Cast Roller, and then Blueberry, and that's spelled strangely. But if you just put in podcast hosts, then they'll come up. And if you have a further question, email me on that. If you're looking at a host and you say, Kathy, is this a good one? Email me, and I'll let you know if I've heard of it and what I know about it. Be glad to do that. You want reliability and you want good stats. There are also a couple out there that allow you to record Podomatic, P-O-D-O-M-A-T-I-C, Podomatic is one of the ones, there's others, that allow you to record online. So you turn on your computer, you go to your Podomatic account, you log in, you plug in your microphone, and you hit the button and you record. It's saved on the server at Podomatic. You cannot edit it, though, but it goes live immediately. So that kind of skips a step for you if you're really confident. I call that an all-in-one solution, Podomatic. And the one that I was talking about with the talk-in, the call-in shows, the live call-in, that would be pretty fun with for authors to do with students. You might do it as a special show, or you might do it as your regular. There's two of them that are very popular. Talk Shoe, don't ask me why, I don't know. TalkShoe.com. And then also Blogcast Radio, blogcastradio.com. Now, Blogcast Radio is free, but they require that they are allowed to put ads into your podcasts. But they give you so much. They give you a blog space. They give you this engine that creates an automatic feed. And they also give you this whole console where people can call into you. You can see the phone number they're calling from. You can turn them live or not. It's a whole command desk, command console. It's pretty amazing. I've done a whole series on there. That might be something you'd want to use on occasion, or you might want to have a whole format that way that you could have calling guests, you know. So those are some of the hosts. We're getting near finishing up, so let me just get to page 9 here. It's a diagram, and I just want to kind of give you a visual and a concept of this entire process, okay? Because I think this is important. I want you to think about this as basically a four-step process. You're starting with your concept, your content. So you want to think about, okay, what is the purpose of my podcast? Back up from the equipment and the hosting and the techie stuff. Let's go back to ground zero, like when you're writing your books. What's the purpose? What do I want to accomplish? Where do I see this going? Basically, what's going to be the biggest bang for my buck? And your buck might be your time investment. How am I going to maximize this in time investment for my professional goals? So think about that for you personally. And from that, conceptualize what you think the focus of your podcast series might be. It might be for an individual, for each of your books, you might have a separate series, or you might have one that ties together all your different books if you're in all one area. If you write a whole bunch of books on multicultural education, then you might be able to do one series that all of the different texts could use in different ways. So you've got to think about that and think about what you want to accomplish with it. Research, next step is go out on Google, go in iTunes, and research what's already out there. What are people doing on that topic or similar topics? How are they doing it? What formats? Are they doing like a news show? Are they doing a dialogue? Are they doing a monologue? What are they doing with it? And how can you differentiate what you're doing from the pack? How can you be something different? What is going to be your niche? This is all about social media, digital media. This is all about niche marketing. And it's powerful. I mean, I sound like some sort of marketing advertising person. I'm an education professor, folks. I am not a business person. I have been floored at what I have learned by doing this myself and what I have seen happening. I get so excited watching social trends, and I've lived this. It's so exciting. This is powerful. Everybody talks about niche marketing. Until you experience this, you might not have any idea the power of it. It's phenomenal. How can you differentiate yourself? How can you use this as leverage to set your books, the things that you're doing professionally as an author, apart from everybody else in your field? How can you make you stand out as somebody different, special, unique? This might be the thing that differentiates your work, might be part of what differentiates it. Now you're ready to go on to the third part of the diagram. Clarify your message. Taking together what you saw in stage one and stage two, clarify your message that you want to communicate for your entire series and begin to plan not just episode titles, but how to approach this bigger project in phase one, phase two, phase three. Because it's going to be a shift in your perspective about your marketing and about maybe your writing or the ancillaries that you create for your books. So how are you going to work this into your system? Phase one, do I need a technical person or do I just need somebody to do some coaching and training with me? Phase two, how many of these am I going to create? How quickly in the second phase, the production phase? How many do I need so that I can launch? And then phase three, how many and how frequently will I add to what I'm creating? So you don't have to create a set of 30 before you go live. That's not what this is about. It's not static content. The power of this is that it's living content, that you start off with a bundle of five because it's what iTunes, the biggest venue, is about. You start with a bundle of five, so that shows that you have a significant investment of time and dedication to doing this project. And then you add on a semi-regular basis, whether it's once a week, and who of us has time, I don't know, to do it once a week, forget about it. But it might be every 2 weeks or once a month. I think that's more reasonable for those of us that this is not our full-time job. None of us are full-time podcasters. I don't think you'd be on this call if you were. The other way to approach it is you set aside a week of your life and you record 20 episodes and then you release them every 2 weeks or once a month, right? I mean, that's how they shoot TV shows. Once you go live, you want to watch your statistics. You want to have a regular basis that once a month you get in there and look at statistics so you can see what your listeners are telling you by their habits. Okay, so you're clarifying your message. You're developing phase one, phase two, phase three of your plan. Now you're ready to sit down and start some basic script writing. Doesn't have to be verbatim, but basic script writing and audio production. Now you're finally starting to use the tech. All this other stuff you're using online to do your research, but you're really not in the tech yet as far as production and development. Now, if you take a look at page 10 of the handout, I give you some samples on scripts. If you've never done radio or you've never done video or audio, you might not never have thought about this, but we finally realized it as we were doing our first podcast. And listen to this when you're doing your research and looking at what already is out there. See what people are doing as far as having a musical intro. They're branding themselves. You might have a variety of music, some different music every week, or you might have the same little jingle all the time. But you usually have the same intro at the beginning that kind of clues the audience in, oh, yeah, I'm at the right place. This is Kathy and Mark. Oh, yeah, my buddies, we're back. So my intro goes something like this. Welcome to this episode of the Teachers Podcast, providing ed tech professional development for teachers on demand. This is Dr. Kathy King broadcasting from the Ed Tech Conference, and I have some fabulous guests with me today. And I sometimes do that when I'm doing a session like this because we'll actually record live. Then after your little intro, you have the body of your podcast. What are the points? What are you delivering that day? Then as you're closing, here's your outro. This concludes this episode. Thank you for being with us. Be sure to check our website at www.teacherspodcast.org, where you can find past episodes, links to all the tremendous resources we've talked about in this episode, and you can also comment on what we've provided. Email us with your comments and suggestions. You can reach us at teacherspodcast@gmail.com. This podcast has been copyrighted, produced, developed, and supported by Transformation Education, LLC. All rights reserved. All right, so we put in our copyright information at the end. So how do you get the jingle music and sound effects? If you take a look at teacherspodcast.org, you'll find that there's a whole tab, a whole page of resources. Oh, and I actually put it on page 13, 14 of your handout, the podcasting resource list. You've got links to information about Audacity. You've got tutorials for how to record and edit in Audacity. And then as you keep going down, you'll find information about copyright issues and guidance and information about what we call pod-safe music. You can't take your favorite Tina Turner song, take it off the CD, and put it on your podcast. That's not allowed. You know that. But there are all these sites out there that independent artists are thrilled to give you their music free just for mentioning them, or mentioning the site where you got them from. And so I list some of those for you. The same thing about sound effects. Unless you make your own, you can't just take sound effects you hear on the web. You have to get them from a repository. Do not, please, don't go out on the web looking for free sound effects. Use the links I give you. For some reason, you can pick up a lot of spyware and viruses looking for free sound effects and free clip art. I do not know what that's about, but they seem to target people that are looking for those things and just pile them in with bogus stuff. I also recommend you look at the podcasting legal guide. This is created by Creative Commons. It tells you everything that you need to know on the legal side of rights, what's allowed, what's not, that you should have people that you interview on your podcast sign a permission form, a sample permission form, etc. Questions for me? Does everybody glazed over?
I'm wondering, what is your favorite way of using this as a teacher, or your three favorite ways?
Ah, very good question. I see a couple of really great things as a teacher for this. And this is not a promo call for a book, but I have to tell you, my Podcasting for Teachers book is inexpensive. You can get it at Amazon inexpensively, and that's what that book is about. It not only shows you how to create your own podcast, nuts and bolts all the way through, everything I talked about and much more, but it also gives you a whole bunch of examples about how podcasting is being used in education. So this would really give you a one-volume, in-depth answer to all of this and much more of what I did. It would take me like 10 hours to do that book, probably more. But for me, as a higher ed professor, the ways I like to use the podcast, one, I like to have students create their own. So if I was creating a textbook and creating podcasts students were going to use, I would have maybe information. If I was doing a research textbook, I would have, not only is the material in the textbook there about how do you do a lit review, how do you do research on the web, but if you take that same material, you know, we've got textual readers, we've got auditory listeners and visual learners. So if we could provide graphics in the book and text in the book and then take that same critical piece of information, so the critical pieces of information throughout your book, if you also share that lesson in audio, the critical part, not a three-hour audio, but I'm talking about a 15-minute. So there might be two 15-minute pieces that go with each chapter that students could listen to. That would be powerful. I can't tell you how strong that is for my students, because they'll have, I teach educational technology, and we'll be learning about blogs, we'll be learning about wikis or this or that. But they're also listening to maybe episode 35 of Teacher's Podcast, where Mark and I are talking about blogs and wikis. They're reading the book, they're going out and looking at things on the web, but then they also listen to Mark and I talk about it, our opinions, our values, how we use it, what's going on, that sort of thing. And they say that that brings it alive in a new dimension. Another part is if there are, if you're writing a book that has stories where you do scenarios or something like that, or you're illustrating things, or maybe it has primary resources in it, so that, you know, Ann Hull, I think it is the founder of Social Work, and maybe you have a piece on her. Maybe have somebody do a first-person narrative of her, taking on the character of the person that's in your historical background, and actually getting into it with the accent, the voice, and taking on the person. And the students not only read it on the page, but they hear this. That's powerful. That's an activity I have students do sometimes. They might do a first-person narrative or first-person impersonation or dialogue of a historical event. The students really like being able to hear the stories, hear the illustrations told in a lively voice rather than just on the page. Boy, does that stick in their memory. Another part is, I think an important part is, I would do the professional development for the teachers. I would create a couple of short podcasts that introduce your book to the teachers as to the value, how they could use it, what your vision is of how it could be used, the many different ways, the many different options. Very often teachers think things can only be used in one way. And if you can break down that barrier and say, no, you know, if you don't want to use chapter two, fine. If you want to rearrange the chapters in the syllabus, fine. You know, and you give them options in some of those intro teacher support files, I think that would be very important. And they hear it in the author's voice. How empowering that is. They're going to feel connected to you. How about ideas from you folks? What are you thinking? What might you use podcasting with your books for?
Kathy?
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Yes. I'm very interested in creating a podcast between me and, say, for instance, a newspaper reporter that asks wonderful questions.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were both on the phone,
yeah,
is that the same as if we were in the same room?
Yeah, I would use, I'll tell you what to use for that. There's a free service. I love free. Teachers love free, and so I chase down free resources that are good. Freeconferencecall.com gives you a free conference call line and gives you the recording capability. And as long as you don't use a headset or a speakerphone, you'll get good quality to be able to create a podcast out of it. You
Great,
also could
you.
Do it via Skype, but that takes a little bit more technical ability. Most people know how to use a phone.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Who was it? The gentleman had a question?
Well, no, I had a comment.
Yep.
Believe it or not, in 1968 to 87, I was working as a consultant to Peter Kiewit's Sons in Nebraska, and I took the textbook, which was a management textbook written by two University of Chicago professors, and did a complete review of it prior to the engineers using the book in their workshop. And it was a success year after year. Now, this is long before we thought of podcasting. But I did a total overview of the book and then indicated how they ought to be reading the book according to, you know, the way we in learning assistants teach people to read text. Just a thought.
How did they distribute that? Cassettes?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that was in, remember, 1968 to 1987.
Oh.
And it was by cassette. You're right.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And they each had a cassette of that before they came to the workshop, and the workshop was about 1 month long for all the engineers in Peter Kiewit's Sons. I came in the first 3 days to work with them primarily on management skills such as time management, task organization, how to read a textbook, how to read the Wall Street Journal, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought it might be interesting to let you know that...
That's very cool, yeah.
Way back when, before we even thought of podcasting, we do think that anybody who reads a difficult book ought to read, incidentally, also Mortimer J. Adler's book on how to read a book.
Mm-hmm.
And that is probably the most outstanding book at the highest level of how to read a textbook or a difficult book. That's my two cents.
Well, you know, we see this in several ways. You know, digital audio is it's new in the sense that it's digital. Podcasts, it's new in the sense that it's push technology. But we've been using recorders, tape recorders, in classrooms a long time.
Sure.
We know that they're powerful. You know, it's a matter of wrapping our heads around the idea this is much easier than it used to be. Editing tape was not easy. Editing digital audio is simple. Okay.
Yes. No, I would agree, because I think what we have today is so incredible. I mean, I much prefer podcasting today than I would to making a cassette. Absolutely.
And it's going back to some of those things. You know, TV really usurped the day of the radio. And the radio audio, the voice is powerful with people. And I'll tell you, I mean, I hope you can tell from what I've presented and my experience, I did not expect what I have experienced. I did not expect this. People have so connected with me in different ways through listening to me on the web. They come running up to me in conferences. You're Dr. King, because they recognize my picture from the website. I've never met them, but they think they're my best friend. You know, and it's because they've connected with my voice, my books are not that intensely personal. They're academic books, but they have connected with me through voice. It's a powerful thing that our culture in general has missed. And we have a great opportunity, and I'm just thrilled TAA has given me the opportunity to share this session with you folks, and that we can see what some more of our folks in our field of academia do with this. I'm excited to see what you folks do with what you've heard. Please let me know if you end up doing a podcast. I'd be glad to share it with the people that follow me and tell them about it. We'll put you into our network and let people know what you're doing. There is so much yet to be created and innovated through this that it's going to be a terrific experience to see how we academic authors grasp hold of this technology and escalate it for teaching and learning. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you folks accomplish as well. Build on what I've learned. Take it to another level yet, you know. If I can be of assistance, please let me know. I do consulting as a coach. We also do, my team does technical development, so we could do the background work and do the editing for you. If you'd like that, you can do it on your own. You know, there's so many possibilities. Don't let the details get in your way. At least give this a shot. It's a tremendous opportunity for all of us. If you take a look just for a second at page 7, this is, just so you know what these squiggly lines are, this is what the gentleman and I were talking about. This is when you use Audacity and you record your voice, you see these squiggly lines. That's the voice wave patterns. And let's say that those two big set of wiggly lines there in the middle, the two big clumps, that's me going, ahem, ahem. And I want to delete that out of my podcast, out of my digital audio. It's so simple, it's unbelievable. You take your mouse, you highlight those two big blotches, right? So they're basically four blotches because it's two channels. You highlight those four blotches, sliding with your mouse left to right. And if we want to delete it, what button do you think we hit on our keyboard? Anybody? If we want to delete that section, and we've highlighted it with the mouse, what button do you think
delete.
You hit on your keyboard?
Delete.
You got it. You're brilliant. That's all there is to digital editing, and it automatically squishes the file back together so that you never even know something was there. You can make yourself sound fantastic. No stumbling, no hums, no ums and does. Get rid of all of it and just sound smooth. And fantastic. And that takes away the fear of the microphone also, public speaking. I think that's a fantastic release for adults and maybe for some of us authors. Some authors are not very public people. So knowing that you have a safety net, you can delete the file if you hate what you sounded like. You can even change the pitch of your voice so you can sound different than you really are if you don't like your voice. But you can get rid of any errors very easily. So I hope this has been helpful for folks.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Kathleen, for sharing your expertise with us, and thank you all for participating in today's teleconference. I will be sending an email to all of you following the teleconference that includes a short survey about your experience today. Again, the email will also include Kathleen's contact information.
Thank you. Look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Thank you, TAA.
This has been an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.